Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loright. Coming up today, we're going to have a really interesting speech by a professor from Duke University about the modern origins of the right-wing movement here in the U.S. It's really a fascinating speech. We'll hear that in just a moment. We want to thank Reverend Robert White from Valrico. Thank you very much for that nice contribution. He's going to take the book by Robert Kuttner called The Stakes, 2020 and the Survival of American Democracy. We really haven't talked much about that during this fund drive, but that is a great book.
I haven't heard of it.
Robert, you're going to enjoy that. Well, Ahmed and Summer are here.
You know, earlier today... Oh, sorry to cut you off. You were going to say something.
No, I was just looking at Sean.
You just said, Ahmed and Summer are here, and I am here, and I don't want to take too much of your time. But, you know, earlier today, somebody called in a pledge, and I misspoke. I thought it was 500, but it was really 250, and then I corrected it, you know, on the air. Well, apparently that same person, Hatem Fariz, called back in and doubled his pledge from 250 to 500. So thank you so much for that wonderful donation.
You're
and things.
Very persuasive.
Well, I didn't mean to do it. It slipped out. Mm-hmm. And his comment says he originally donated 250. Ahmed announced 500. Hatem wants to make it right. So thank you for making it right.
Very
I should
nice.
Do this
Very
more
nice.
Often, you know. More people will make it right. But seriously, we need to raise more money. We didn't meet our goal. Samar is going to be stuck with paying the whole thing if we don't raise it. So that's like $3,500, Samar. I don't know if you're able to do it or not, but...
That would be
very generous.
Too much of a burden for her.
I mean, your husband is part of the 1% also, isn't he? Or,
yeah.
Oh, no, he's a physician. No, just kidding. But do what you can. I'm going to call some of my friends to make sure that we get those pledges because some people are not listening. The problem is with the pledge drive is not everybody's listening to us in real time right now. They're listening through the app. They're listening to the podcast. They're listening later. So how do we get them when they're listening later and they're not listening to the live, you know, pledge drive, how do we get the money? So that's what I guess in my situation, I'll be calling my friends.
Okay. And you've got a lot of friends. Well, Summer has a lot of friends, too.
We're going to do everything we can to support this station. We're not only the hosts, but we're also the donors and fundraisers. So thanks again, and good luck with your show today.
All right. Thank you very much, too. Well, Sean Canan is here. I'm Rob Loright. We're going to try to raise some more money today. In fact, we've got to raise about $8,000 over the next 2 hours as we try to keep public affairs on track. We've got a great speech that we haven't played during this fund drive, and it's by Nancy McLean, who happened to be in town. She was in Sarasota just last Friday. But this is a speech that gives her overall point of view, the origins of the radical right-wing power. And she talks about the Koch brothers in this speech. And if you haven't heard her talk, stick around, because I think in the next hour you're going to be fascinated by what she has to say. We're fundraising here at WMNF. We do it one donation at a time. We're a listener-sponsored radio station. And we've been doing this since 1978. A lot of people have just found us in the last month or the last few months, and they know how unique our programs are. And if you know WMNF, you know that we never have a commercial. We exist on donations from our listeners. 70% of the money that it takes to run WMNF comes directly from these fund drives and the memberships that people make in WMNF. So we hope that you will today make a contribution, help us reach that final $8,000 goal by 1 o'clock this afternoon.
And one of the things that we can do is give you a thank you gift. We could give you, for example, this speech. If you donate $80 to WMNF, we can send you a CD of the speech you're about to hear. You can listen to it again. You can share it with your friends. You can listen while you're driving. However you prefer, 813-238-8001. You'll get a gift for yourself, but you'll also get the gift of radio, and you'll get the understanding that you're helping to keep community radio alive in the Tampa Bay area. You can make a donation online at WMNF.org or on the WMNF smartphone app.
All right, so listen to this speech from Nancy McLean, a professor at Duke University, about her book, Democracy in Chains. And for your donation of $80, you can have this talk on CD. 813-238-8001. Listen to this speech. I think you're going to say, wow.
The question that this stealth plan presents Americans with, once we know it, is at one level quite simple. Do we want to live in a cosmetically updated version of mid-century Virginia? A place that crushed democracy, prevented collective organizing, and suppressed human dignity to allow its elites free reign? And we have to ask ourselves, is what this cause seeks the kind of country that we want to live in and bequeath to our children and future generations? That is the real public choice. And if we delay our response much longer, those who are imposing their stark utopia will choose for us.
That's Nancy McLean, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Nancy McLean on the origins of radical right-wing power. The history of the anti-government and anti-democratic politics that have transformed the United States in recent years is largely obscured from view. The radical right's agenda includes suppression of voting rights, privatization of everything from schools to Medicare to Social Security to public lands, elimination of unions, and limiting majority rule. Core beliefs also include there's no problem tax cuts won't solve, and that the best kind of regulation is no regulation. Let industry decide. And the intellectual godfather of this extreme right-wing thinking? Someone you've probably never heard of, James McGill Buchanan, a Nobel Prize-winning economist. And the money to promote his ideas comes mostly from billionaire Charles Koch. These ideological positions have moved from beyond the fringe to where they are openly discussed and legislation is proposed. If these forces get their way, democracy will be in chains. Our guest today is Nancy McLean. She's the award-winning author of Behind the Mask of Chivalry, Freedom is Not Enough, and Democracy in Chains. She's professor of history and public policy at Duke University. She spoke in Madison, Wisconsin, at an event organized by the Havens Center. And now, Nancy McLean, The Origins of Radical Right-Wing Power.
I'll start with the obvious. American politics are in crisis, right? A government that is supposed to be of, by, and for the people is in crisis. Even elementary norms of civic decency and truth are in crisis. You know this. It has become abundantly clear of late to anyone who might not have been paying close attention before. But what you might be struggling to figure out is how we got here and what that means. The watershed that we've reached in our public life now has been fed by many streams, some of which have received extensive attention. Those streams include the movement conservatism that made Barry Goldwater the Republican candidate for president in 1964, just after his vote against the Civil Rights Act of that year. Another and related stream is the religious right. And then there is the white supremacist right, which has lately been trying to rebrand itself. All of these are important and have produced the votes to effect radical policy change. But I'm here tonight to tell you about another piece of the puzzle of how we got into the dangerous situation in which we now find ourselves. A missing piece, I believe, and that is the ideas that are guiding the billionaire-backed radical right made notorious by Charles Koch. And I believe these ideas are the crucial piece that we have missed because they explain so much that otherwise seems mysterious. It's also crucial, I believe, because knowing about this piece may equip citizens such as all of us in this room to lead the way out of this mess before it is too late. Because I think there is an unmarked peril in our situation right now. And that is that the noisiest threats are getting the most attention. Among them, the chronic race baiting and bullying coming from the White House. But that spectacle, that daily, constant, nonstop spectacle, is drawing nearly all media and voter attention as an even more menacing plan is moving along apace. It is moving along in the now 30 states wholly dominated by this cause, to the point that the Democracy Alliance speaks of them as having an electoral stranglehold. It is moving along in federal agencies, and it is moving along in the courts. And this plan is being pursued by a much smaller cause, but by an archly determined and a breathtakingly well-funded one. More than that, this cause's architects aim to rewrite the rules of our society permanently. And more than that, this cause has shown before that they are willing to use these other more popular sections of the right, the religious right and the white supremacist right, to get what they want. I'll state my case simply. Behind all the seeming chaos and dysfunction in American public life right now, there is a strategy in play. And that strategy is far along. One of its field generals said this to donors in late 2015. "We're close to winning," he said. "They," meaning the critics, the rest of us, "don't have the real path." That was Mark Holden, the head of Koch Industries' government and public affairs operation, gloating to an invitation-only audience of billionaire and multimillionaire donors. Now, you've heard a lot in the last several years, at least until the election of Donald Trump, about the fortune that Charles Koch has been investing in changing our politics. But what you may likely not have heard about is the ideas, that technology, as Charles Koch refers to them, that have made those investments so devastatingly effective. And it's important to know that Koch had been funding libertarian intellectuals for three decades before he began to apply this technology in earnest. And now we can see that it has been devastatingly effective. And in the course of my research, I learned that it was an academic economist who taught Charles Koch that for capitalism of the variety that they want to thrive, democracy must be enchained. Democracy in Chains provides an unknown backstory of this defining moment in history in which we find ourselves, as it also tries to uncover that real path to which Mark Holden referred. And it's in its essence, the book is a story of two men, a thinker and a CEO, whose lives converged through a shared commitment to transform the model of government that our country built up over the course of the 20th century through citizen pressure and organizing. The thinker was a Tennessee-born economist, James McGill Buchanan, who spent most of his career in Virginia institutions, beginning in Charlottesville. And the CEO is the Kansas-based, of course, Charles Koch, who spent most of his adult life, when he wasn't building Koch Industries into one of the largest privately held corporations in the world, spent most of his life trying to find a way to make our country and the world, in fact, conform to his arch vision of economic liberty. A kind of free-reign capitalism akin to the 19th century variant that was skewered so brilliantly by Charles Dickens. That was also the kind of capitalism that brought us the Great Depression and the polarization between fascism and communism after World War I. So Koch's vision is an audacious one and a dangerous one. He is, to my mind, playing with fire, but it is the rest of us who will get burned. The story is first of the crucible, in which Buchanan came up with this idea of enchaining democracy to insulate economic liberty. As the civil rights movement made headway in the Virginia where he was working and in the nation as a whole in the late 1950s and 1960s. And then it is about how Koch funded an apparatus to make that idea a reality in a messianic quest that has produced the volatile situation we are now confronting. And I have to admit up front, it's a frightening story, but I also believe that knowing what we're really up against is vital to assessing how best to defend a democracy that I think many of us now understand is facing existential threat. rather than lecture in a conventional way, I thought what I would do is share with you the story of how I stumbled upon the trail that led me to these conclusions. Because I think that knowing the route that led to what I've just said will give you an even sharper sense of the stakes. Because it turns out that what we're seeing now, today, in 2017, is not the first time that the libertarian right has shown itself willing to exploit white supremacy to advance the cause of property supremacy. Also, the trail that led to these conclusions reveals the surprising role that some academics, some scholars, have played in bringing us to this point. And I think that's a history that all of us who work in higher education need to reckon with. So what led me to the fairly shocking conclusions that I just shared? In a word, serendipity. I am not a historian of economic thought. I am a historian of social movements with a particular longstanding interest in the U.S. South. And about 10 years ago, I came across the tragic tale of Prince Edward County, Virginia, whose white officials answered the U.S. Supreme Court's call to desegregate its public schools without further delay by, as the white county officials put it, going out of the public school business entirely. They shuttered their entire public school system. They actually posted no trespassing signs on the public schools. They left black children with no formal education whatsoever, only what social movement organizations could provide, as their white counterparts headed off to private segregation academies funded with state-subsidized tuition grants, with what we would today call school vouchers. And the county officials persisted in this course for 5 years until the courts compelled them to reinstate a public school system. So I was embarrassed that as a Southern historian, I had never come across this history. And I was deeply moved by what I found in the archives of the American Friends Service Committee. And so I started to research this story. And seeing that tax-funded school vouchers were crucial to the story interested me, because this has often been told as kind of the last gasp of Jim Crow, when in fact it was starting to look like maybe the first shout of neoliberalism. And lo and behold, I learned in short order that the University of Chicago ultra-free market economist Milton Friedman had issued his first call for school vouchers in 1955 in the full knowledge of how they would be used in the South. Southern segregationist officials, particularly governors, had been threatening for several years, as the five cases that became Brown versus Board of Education wended their way to the Supreme Court, they had been threatening that they would shut down public schools rather than let black and white children sit next to each other under compulsion by the federal government. And Friedman did this. And I know he did it in the full knowledge of what he was doing, because I had the correspondence between him and an editor who pointed out how this manifesto would be used, and also pointed out that black citizens could not vote in Virginia, had no say over these devastating, destructive public policies that were being adopted. But Friedman persisted in his course. So he became part of my story. But in following a footnote, I learned of a 1959 report, as this threat from Prince Edward County was in the air, because it was in the fall of 1959 that they were told to finally desegregate. In 1959, two other economists who had set up a center for political economy and social philosophy at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville in 1956 issued this other report, and one of them was this man, James Buchanan. And this report attempted to refute a movement of moderate whites that had come together over the fall of 1958 to try to preserve the public schools from this massive resistance. And Buchanan and his colleague were essentially trying to push back this moderate white movement by making a case that they didn't know how to do the math. And they were doing the math wrong because they were not realizing that if the state sold off all its facilities to private operators, those private operators would then have lower costs and they could provide better education, the economists argued, without obeying the courts. They also used a lot of the language that would be familiar to us now, that it would break up the monopoly of schools, that it would bring competition, that it would bring freedom of choice, give parents a vote on where their kids went, and so forth. They did this in the full knowledge that the schools that would be funded this way and supported by this fire sale of public goods would be white segregation academies, because those were the only private schools in question. Now, needless to say, it stunned me as a university professor to see two university professors making a case for what their state's most arch segregationists were seeking. That was the most radical demand of a group called the Defenders of State Sovereignty and Individual Liberty, Virginia's equivalent of the White Citizens Councils of the Deep South. And they were seeking, in effect, this fire sale of public resources to support their segregation academies.
Well, we're listening to a talk by Nancy McLean, who's a professor at Duke University. She is the chief professor of history there at Duke, and she's the author of several books. Her most recent book is Democracy in Chains, and that's the topic of this talk that we're listening to right now. This is something Nancy McLean has been a guest on this show, Radioactivity, and also From a Woman's Point of View, and we're offering this speech today during our fund drive for a donation of $80. It's on CD. So call us at 813-238-8001. That's our phone number here at WMNF, and we're going to take 2 minutes just to try to raise a little bit of money. We hope in this hour to raise about $4,000. I think we can do it. We're going to go back to the speech in just about 2 minutes. Sean Kinnan is here, and I'm Rob Lori. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for supporting WMNF if you already have. Right now we're speaking to those people that maybe are newish listeners to WMNF. Maybe you've never contributed to this listener-supported radio station, and today we hope to convince you that it is so important to this community that we have a radio station like this where independent voices are heard all the time. And you can get this speech that we're listening to for an $80 contribution. I want to thank Anonymous in Bradenton. Actually, this is from Patty in Bradenton, a $15 donation. Patty, thank you very much. And thanks to John Maddox from Apollo Beach. He is supportive of the 11 o'clock show. John, thank you very much. And he's taken a WMNF t-shirt for his $120 donation. So that's two donations on our way to hearing from about 45 people this hour. And Sean is here. Sean, this speech is great. We will play most of it today, but we won't be able to play all of it. People can share it with their friends. If you've got friends in Gainesville or friends in Jacksonville or Orlando or Pensacola or Tallahassee, or maybe you've got friends in Fort Myers or Naples or Miami that can't pick up WMNF, it's a great a way to send it to a friend who's very interested in these topics about how did we get to the point where selling off public assets, privatization, and the, you know, just dismantling of regulation, especially environmental regulations, how did that become part of where we're headed in Tallahassee and Washington, D.C.? Well, Nancy McLean explains that, explains the beginnings of all this going back to the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah, and you can get this speech for an $80 contribution. We'll send it to you on CD by calling 813-238-8001. You can donate as well on WMNF.org. And it's so strange to hear the schools derisively referred to as government-run schools. I mean, it's just like using all the code words to make them sound bad. We're talking about schools, right? And public schools are government-run schools, I guess, but you know, people didn't used to refer to them derisively like that. But that's what we heard this week in the State of the Union speech, and Nancy McLean is talking about the origins of all of that. 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org.
Yeah, we'll go back to the speech in just a moment. We're hoping to get one call this break, and if you really enjoy listening to WMNF, and if you feel like you're not alone, you feel like you're hearing things that you wish more radio stations would talk about, you're hearing things that perhaps you've read about, perhaps you've read Nancy's book, Democracy in Chains, and you wish that there was a place where these ideas were discussed and these ideas were talked about. Radio is such a powerful medium, but it's used largely to entertain and largely to sell you fast food and cars and that sort of thing. And insurance. It's really not used to inform and educate and uplift, and that was the idea behind community radio stations when they started in Berkeley, California. Before there was NPR, there was community radio, and a lot of the people that went to work for NPR started at community radio. But we're trying to keep this unique radio station on the air. Not many like it in Florida, and certainly not many like it in the southeastern U.S., and we're waiting for your donation at our website, WMNF.org. Sean, I'm really concerned. Mm-hmm. We haven't gotten our first donation this break. We need one donation right now and one person to say, here's my vote of support to keep doing what you're doing. Keep the independence that WMNF has practiced for 41 years. Keep that independence because we don't want you to have to go to the big box stores. We don't want you to have to go to the billionaires for funding. Please call us up right now. Your donation of $20, $35, $50 keeps us independent so that we don't have to go to those big box stores and ask for, with our hands out, saying we'd like a donation. It keeps us independent. We don't have to go to the billionaires and say, well, we'd like a donation to run this radio station. Well, it would change. If MNF started doing that, the sound of MNF would change. Right now, we have practiced independence for 41 years. We're planning to do it for the next 41, but we need one donation this time. And Sean, I'm looking at the lines, and the lines are just not lighting up at 813-238-8001. Maybe we can get one line lit right now.
I hope so. Rob, you were pointing out the difference between WMNF and the commercial radio stations you hear up and down the dial. And you mentioned the commercialism. That's right. We don't have that. You mentioned the kind of entertainment, if you can even call it that. It's kind of, to me, it sounds like lowest common denominator, really boring when I listen to a lot of other radio stations, commercial music radio stations. But then another difference is that I turn to some radio stations and it seems that their whole intent is to stir up division and to stir up hatred. And maybe there's a market for that. Maybe they can make money from advertisers by stirring up division and hatred. But I just don't see how that's something that's, of value to the community. Whereas when you turn it to WMNF, even when people disagree, like you can have a debate between different candidates, or you can have a debate about an issue that's a hot topic, but you can have an intellectual conversation on WMNF without people resorting to shouting or to stirring up hatred and fear. If this is something that's important to you, if you think that that's a value for your community and that more stations should take that lead, give us a call and make a donation. Invest in the future of WMNF. 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org.
Yeah, that's so true, and thank you for saying that. And we're going to go back and hear more of this speech. We haven't had that first donation this break. We know that you're probably a person who reads a lot, probably a person that doesn't think that commercial radio or commercial TV always serves the best interests of the public, that you want more than what commercial media provides. And we know you're out there, and we know you're listening. And so we're going to go back to the speech right now, and hopefully we'll get one person to make a contribution right now at 813-238-8001. Nancy McLean, the topic is The Origins of the Radical Right Wing, and she is the author of the book Democracy in Chains. She's a professor at Duke University. Let's listen to more of her talk. And remember, we haven't gotten that first donation this break at 813-238-8001.
And it also intrigued me that these economists did not make their case in racist terms, as some at the time did, but instead in economic terms. And in fact, they were leveraging their authority as university professors and as economists, leveraging their discipline to back up the most right-wing, anti-democratic figures of the day. So these two men, Buchanan and his colleague Warren Nutter, knew they were exploiting the schools crisis to move their libertarian agenda. An agenda, for those of you who know the Mont Pelerin Society, they both were admitted to membership by then and were active in that transnational neoliberal group. And they were saying that this was part of what they called the free society, right? This libertarian agenda, even though they showed no sympathy whatsoever for the black civil rights activists whose slogan was Freedom Now, and in fact, whose First Amendment rights had been taken away by the same state legislature in the massive resistance program with no protest from the libertarians at the University of Virginia. And the cover letter that Buchanan and Nutter sent to Virginia elected officials, including one who had promoted these anti-NAACP laws, said that they were issuing their report and, quote, letting the chips fall where they may. I knew where those chips would fall. Anyone who was paying attention to what had happened in Virginia over the preceding 3 years knew exactly where those chips would fall. They would fall especially hard on black children and their families. That phrase just lodged itself in my gut somehow and kept me focused on this Buchanan and wanting to know more, because I could see how whatever was in his mind, whatever he personally thought about matters of race, he was acting in the full knowledge of the harm that these actions would inflict on children in Virginia's schools. And as an educator, I wondered, how could anyone do such a thing? Not in mindless ignorance, but in cold-eyed calculation. So trying to solve that puzzle, though, led me to another one that was equally mystifying, because at the time I knew so little about libertarianism as an organized cause. It actually has been, for most of our history, utterly marginal, right? Because these ideas are not persuasive to that many outside the ranks. The new shocker, as I started to pursue this James Buchanan, came in another tantalizing brief reference from a distinguished comparative political scientist. And Alfred Stapon, this political scientist, mentioned in passing that Buchanan's Virginia School of Political Economy had a more important and lasting effect on Chile under the Pinochet dictatorship than Milton Friedman. And everybody of a certain age who was following politics will have heard that Milton Friedman went to Chile, which was under the most brutal, barbaric dictatorship that helped fuel the human rights consciousness of the 1970s. It was so bad. Friedman went in 1975 to advise on how to combat inflation. That was well publicized. What wasn't well publicized was Buchanan's visit 5 years later. But at that point, when I learned of this, I still didn't know quite what the Virginia School was or how it differed from the Chicago School of Economics, which most of the Virginia faculty had attended. So I began to try to get more information about this guy, Buchanan. And I learned that he had won the Nobel Prize in Economic Sciences and that he was awarded the prize by the Swedish Academy for having pioneered a new way of thinking that was called public choice economics. And this public choice economics became influential in not only economics, but particularly political science and law, and also among activists and elected officials on the right. So what Buchanan did that was new was what he liked to call the economic analysis of politics. But his economic analysis of politics was very different from, say, another stream, like Marx's economic analysis of politics involved questions of class and power and whatnot. Buchanan's was very different. What he did was to apply Chicago-style individualist models to political actors and to argue that those political actors could only be understood as individuals seeking their own personal self-interest, not the common good, as they claimed. And that led Buchanan to some interesting puzzle solving that drew attention. For example, he came up with a new explanation of deficits that has proved very persuasive to many elected officials, too. Buchanan solved a puzzle that Keynesian economists had not, which is why governments would overspend, not just in times of recession or depression, when you needed to get the economy going with government investments, but also in times of prosperity. And Buchanan's explanation was that officials' self-interest in re-election led them to make profligate promises to multiple constituencies in the knowledge that the cost would be borne by others, not by themselves. And this was persuasive to many people and drew a lot of attention, and it's not completely wrong. His particular training was in public finance, so a great focus on government taxation, on government revenue streams, on government spending, and so forth. But that interest in containing and rolling back government spending led also to a new emphasis on the incentives of the political process and how tweaking those incentives might yield very different outcomes. And I have to say here that those ideas have since interested people who are not on the right, most famously Cass Sunstein, who worked on regulatory matters under President Obama and thought creatively about how you could nudge incentives to improve public health, you know, doing things like, say, you know, moving sugary cereal out of kids' reach in the carts down to the bottom, you know, or the top without, that doesn't infringe on anybody's freedom, but it might improve public health. So there's a wider school of public choice economics. But Buchanan's Virginia school of political economy was always distinctive. And Buchanan himself said, looking back, that when he set to work in the late 1950s, the idea of the public interest was dominant in politics, right? Now, we all know the public interest isn't a thing like this podium, right? But it's something that we construct through conversation and deliberation. But if you have an idea for how we might all be better off and you have a constituency to promote that idea and you persuade people, we might just get something like Social Security or the Wagner Act or the Civil Rights Act or, you know, many other things as we persuade people of what the public interest was. But Buchanan said of this idea of the public interest, he said, that's what I wanted to tear down. To tear down, that's his verb. And again, I thought, why would anyone want to do that, right? To tear down the idea of the public interest or the common good. Reading more, I learned that to a libertarian like Buchanan, there is no common good. Any such notion of shared purpose will lead government to coerce those who don't agree with the majority. And Buchanan and his colleagues came to argue that democracy violates the individual liberty of the minority. Now, the only minority I ever saw them express concern for was the wealthy minority. So that's who we're really talking about here, although he did not specify. But in the case of wealthy taxpayers who don't share the majority's view of the public interest, these men argued, it all but steals their property if it taxes them for purposes they don't share. And Buchanan, even in his academic writing, could be quite agitational about this. So in the book that he described as the major work of his career that came out in 1975, he said at one point, what difference is there between a mugger in Central Park that takes my wallet and a government that takes my taxes for purposes I don't support? So it was quite agitational, buried in game theory and all these other frameworks. But basically, he was insisting that we are not our brother's keepers, right? Or at least we should not be using government to shift tax revenues from one citizen to another. And he also came to talk about all of this in very stark and foreboding terms. In fact, in a language that I think anyone could recognize as dehumanizing. He spoke of net tax recipients, in other words, people who get more from government than they give in the way of taxes, people that Mitt Romney would later refer to famously as the 47%. Buchanan spoke of people who are net tax recipients as, quote, parasites on the productive. He warned of predators and prey. The predators would be people going to government, particularly in groups, seeking things that they could not get themselves as individuals in the market. So he used this language of predators and prey in a vocabulary that made fellow citizens, say senior citizens seeking a drug benefit or public sector workers seeking higher wages or smaller class sizes or, you know, whatever. But all of those groups he began to depict as predators and depict the wealthy taxpayers as their prey. Needless to say, this is a vocabulary that is disinhibiting. It is a vocabulary that licenses hostility, and it is a vocabulary that is rife on the American right today, owing to decades of inculcation of these ideas. And as I read more, I learned, too, that for those who think this way, justice is a very simple matter. I keep what I earn, you keep what you earn. This is actually a direct quote from Buchanan's colleague, Walter Williams. And then you collectively can only legitimately tax me if I agree with your goals and methods. So in this libertarian view, only if there is unanimity can a purpose truly be said to be fair or advancing the common good. That's quite something. Very hard to have a sustainable society with a system of unanimity as your desideratum. But Buchanan did not stop there. Believing this way, in the 1970s, he moved from scholarship to organizing, began calling for the creation of a counterintelligentsia well before many others did in 1970. And he also began arguing to funders on the right and to corporate allies and political allies that the right needed to create, again in his words, a gravy train in order to bring people into this cause, get them committed to these libertarian views, and get them to stay in the movement. And he moved from analysis to prescription. He moved into what he called constitutional economics, with the goal of coming up with a legal regime, a system of legal rules that could protect capitalism from government, that could enshrine the rights of the wealthy minority to a degree no society anywhere had ever done. And he actually, on more than one occasion, said that by this measure, by of protecting the rights of the wealthy minority from these predators, all existing constitutions were failures. That's how radical this vision is. He didn't think any constitution anywhere in the world adequately protected this minority. And he found a very interested audience among the generals in need of a new constitution in Chile in 1980. As the military junta of Augusto Pinochet came under pressure from the international community to return to civilian rule at some point and to operate by law, by a constitution, not by brute force as it had been, they invited Buchanan to Chile to advise on how to devise a constitution that could do this thing, that could protect capitalism from government. The dictatorship was willing to eventually cede power to a predominantly civilian government, but they wanted to make absolutely sure that the radical changes that they had effected when popular power was completely undermined, when, you know, thousands of activists had been killed, trade unions were smashed, farmers' organizations weren't allowed to operate, student organizations weren't allowed to operate, there was no freedom of the press. They had done things like sharply privatized education, privatized health care. They went over to a system of individual retirement accounts for Social Security, which were invested with the financial sector, which eventually lost people's savings after charging them a fortune. In any event, they wanted to lock in all of these things that they had accomplished, and Buchanan advised them on a constitution that could help them to do that. And in 2013, move the clock forward, Michelle Bachelet, a president who was elected by two-thirds of the Chilean people after huge mobilizations in the streets, particularly by young people who were angry over the higher education system and particularly the unaffordability of college, she came into office with this reform program and realized that what she called authoritarian trammels in this constitution were keeping her from delivering to that supermajority of the Chilean people. And she complained that this constitution of liberty, as Buchanan's allies called it, had put locks and bolts on what the government could do, on how, on the people's ability to express their will through government.
Well, you're listening to a talk by Professor Nancy McLean. She teaches at Duke University. She's talking about her book, Democracy in Chains, and how the libertarian philosophy is actually anti-democratic. And we're going to try to hear more of this speech in just a moment. We want to thank some people. We're fundraising here at WMNF. If you're just tuning in, This is our week-long fun drive. It's going to end next Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. I'm Rob Lori, joined by Sean Canaan, and we have a challenge now. We have been challenged with a $500 donation. If we get five $100 contributions in the next 10 minutes, we'll get a donation from an anonymous listener in Sarasota. So we're going to try to do that right now. You can get a copy of this speech for an $80 contribution. We have five, and I'll select five of the best speeches from the Alternative Radio series. You can have five of those for a $200 contribution, and that $200 contribution will go to the match, too. So if you want to help us raise an extra $500, make at least a $100 contribution right now by calling this number, 813-238-8001. 813-238-8001. Make a contribution. Help us reach our goal. This goal this hour is $4,000. And Sean, we've had a lot of people call in and make a contribution in the last half hour.
Yeah, this speech is very popular. Captain Russ Shirley from St. Petersburg is getting the CD from Nancy McLean, that is, for an $80 contribution. We'll send him the CD. Thank you so much for that contribution. Also, Lynn Sullivan, who is a public school educator from Tampa, says, thank you for highlighting the work of Nancy McLean. $20 donation there. Also, Anonymous from Bradenton is donating $100. So thank you for those contributions to Community Radio. Now we need to hear from you, 813-238-8001.
This is really a terrific speech, and you may want to share it with other people. Nancy's book is great, too. I highly recommend it. It's called Democracy in Chains. Thanks to Anonymous in Pinellas Park, made an $80 contribution, taking an M&F t-shirt. And Rosa Baxter from Valrico is taking the speech that we're listening to right now, the Nancy McLean speech, and she says, keep on doing what you're doing. This is in support of Democracy Now! In the Morning Show. Rosa, thanks for your $80 contribution. Here's our phone number. It is 813-238-8001. Chris Carbone from St. Petersburg. Chris, thank you very much. Thank you for your kind words, too, taking a WMNF t-shirt for a $100 contribution. And thanks to Anonymous in Dunedin, actually Andy in Dunedin, a $20 contribution, a big supporter of True Talk. Andy, thank you very much for your nice contribution. Well, if you like listening to Radioactivity, usually what I do on this program is provide an interview and then open up the phone lines later on in the program. I try to interview authors or local activists or local officials. Sometimes we have a panel discussion. We'll have a panel discussion on Monday. But please call us up right now. We need to reach that goal. Our goal this hour is to raise $4,000. We've had about, Sean, did you have four people?
Yeah, I had three people, so about six so far.
Yeah, we've had seven people make a donation so far. That's really good. You can make your contribution online at WMNF.org. But this is a radio station that dares to bring you speeches from time to time. We have alternative radio every Tuesday, every other Tuesday at 10 a.m. And it is unusual for a radio station these days to play a speech, but we're happy to do it, and we think that people are smart enough to be able to sit and listen to a speech and think about it, absorb it, and then make up their own mind about it. Oftentimes, we try to bring you cutting-edge authors making speeches. Sean, we need one person right now to call 813-238-8001.
Yeah, we had a lot of support at the beginning of the show, but now we've reached maybe a lull. That means that there's a great opportunity for you to come in and to pledge your support right now. Can you make a phone call at 813-238-8001? If you can donate $80, you can get the CD of Nancy McLean's speech, and you can take it home and we'll send it to you, and you can share it with your friends. Or if you can make a $100 donation, that would help us to reach this matching goal. 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org are two of the ways that you can donate. You can also donate on the WMNF smartphone app, 813-238-8001, and you can talk to our great phone volunteers, and they will take your pledge very quickly.
Well, we're part of the way to getting that that challenge matched, because Anonymous in Wesley Chapel is just taking for their $100 contribution the Nancy McLean speech.
All right.
So thank you. That's one out of five that we need. Mm-hmm. So let's see if we can get four more donations of at least $100. Any donation of $100 or above will get us, will unlock the $500 donation from Sarasota. Here's our phone number, 813-238-8001. If you'd rather just go online, it's easy to go online. Go to our website, wmnf.org. I think we've raised somewhere over $95,000 since we started on Tuesday, and we've got to go to this coming Tuesday to raise the additional $155,000. That's what we've got to raise, I think. And we're hoping that this show, the public affairs show Radioactivity, and the next show, the Midpoint Program with Janelle Irwin, we hope that both are successful today. We've got a big goal between 11 o'clock this morning and 1 o'clock this afternoon. We have to raise $8,000. We've had more than eight people call in, and we really haven't interrupted this speech that much. But right now, we're going to try to make a big push to get at least two more donors to make a contribution at 813-238-8001. If you're in Temple Terrace, if you're in Lutz or Land O'Lakes, if you're in Sarasota or Venice, if you're in St. Petersburg or Tarpon Springs or Port Richey or Newport Richey, please call us at 813-238-8001. We want to hear from our friends in Lakeland, hear from our friends in Brandon and Riverview. We want to hear from our friends in Wachula. 813-238-8001. I know we've got a lot of friends in the station in Dade City and Brooksville, but we got to get some more donations. I see one line lit. That's good. But we're going to have to hear, in order to stay on track, we need to hear from about 30 more people this hour, and we only have about 5 minutes to go.
That means we need to hear from you, and especially if you have a $100 donation, it will help us to meet that match. 813-238-8001. You can get the CD of Nancy McLean. You can get any of the other thank you gifts we've been talking about. You can get five different CDs, including Nancy McLean, for a $200 donation. But please call now, 813-238-8001.
And this is really exciting. I see two more lines light up. And here's another donation that has just officially come in. Michael Fowler from Bradenton just made a $100 contribution. Nice. That means that we need only three more $100 contributions, and we will get that $500 match. That will be a big moment here on WMNF. And Michael, thank you very much for your support. Here's our phone number again, 813-238-8001. And we're trying in this hour to maybe hear from at least 40 people. That would be great. I see another line lit up. That's good. But we need your help. We need you to go to our website, WMNF.org. For a $200 contribution, I'll give you five really good speeches or interviews from the Alternative Radio series. We've been playing a lot of those this fund drive. Also, there's a book I love. It's by Robert Kuttner, who is an economist, and he teaches at Brandeis University. He's written a book called The Stakes, 2020 and the Survival of American Democracy. And he talks about being an economic progressive, and he thinks that economic progressive ideas can win the presidential election. And he explains why in his book, The Stakes. You can have the book, The Stakes, for a $100 contribution. And when you make that $100 contribution, not only will you get a great book, but you'll help us get the match.
813-238-8001. It looks like we have two wonderful people on the line. Will you be the third? Will you be the person that calls in right now and says, yes, here's my $100 donation. I want to support WMNF. I want to help keep Radioactivity on the air and all the other great music and news programming that we bring you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on 88.5 FM, all through the Tampa Bay community, the greater Tampa Bay community. We reach as far as Haines City and maybe beyond, all the way up to Brooksville and beyond, down to Sarasota and Venice. We have a wide range of people. You can listen in your car. You can listen on the app anywhere in the world. 813-238-8001 is how you can make your donation to help keep it all possible. Can we count on you for a $100 donation right now?
Sean, I saw an accountant the other day, just happened to get in a conversation with an accountant, and I told him that I worked at a non-commercial public community radio station. He said, oh, you guys get lots of government funding. And I said, no, we don't. In fact, most of what it takes to run MNF, I told him, comes from donations. Sometimes it's a $20 donation from a wonderful person in Brandon, or it might be a $1,000 donation from somebody that lives in Hyde Park in Tampa, or it might be a $50 donation from somebody that lives in Seminole or Largo. And he said, oh, I thought all those public stations got tons of government money. And what the government says is that if you raise a dollar, essentially, the federal government says, we'll give you 10 cents. That's typically what happens. It's not exactly, but that's pretty close. But the federal government says, you got to be a big station, first of all. You got to be on the air for radio. You got to be on 24 hours a day. You got to have at least 5 paid staff members. And you've got to have a significant amount of local support before we'll even give you a dollar. And that's how the money works. So, Sean, we're still 3 calls away from getting that match. We're hoping to get 3 more $100 contributions. Here's our phone number, 813-238-8001. We're not there yet. Oh, man, I can't believe it.
We do need to hear from you. Maybe you're making a donation on the web at WMNF.org. It just takes a minute to fill in all your information, maybe a minute and a half, and it'll make you feel so good to become a member of the station or maybe renew your membership. Please join the circle of friends. Can you donate at least $5 a month or $10 a month? It's quick and painless. 813-238-8001. Become a sustaining member of WMNF. You really keep the station going with your circle of friends membership. 813-238-8001.
Well, we're going to take a break and get some news. Janelle Irwin will be along with the Midpoint program in the next hour, and we've got a lot of money to raise as we try to keep this radio station financially secure for another 4 months. If you became a hero right now and made a $100 contribution, I think there's a few donations out there floating around. We may be close to reaching that match, so please make that $100 contribution right now. With it, we might make that extra $500. This is WMNF Tampa.